Thank you for getting the door for me. Don't talk quite that loud. So we've already heard a lot this morning and today, if you've been sticking around, about why these compounds are important, their ubiquitous presence, their wide range of characteristics, all of which kind of validate why they deserve further study. So in general, I'm just talking about these compounds because they are ubiquitous everywhere. They're all kinds of compounds that are found in over-the-counter or in prescription medicine. They're compounds that we apply to our bodies and are also in products that we use. This is just a little graph at the bottom. This is from a CDC study in 2010 showing that almost half the people in America are on at least one prescription drug at the time that this study was done, and many people are taking multiple medications. Because of this production and use, over 300 million tons of 70,000 different chemicals were used in the USA in 1 year. As someone mentioned earlier, wastewater treatment plants aren't really designed to deal with these chemicals. They're in very small quantities, so they're not as pressing as pathogens or nitrates or other concerns. And they also just have such a wide range of characteristics that it would be hard to design to take care of them anyways. Because of this incomplete removal, they are found in effluent, they are found in biosolids, they are found in reclaimed water, all of these which are sources to the environment. In the environment, these compounds interact with many different situations. In soil, they're known to adsorb and to form bound residues. This affects their bioavailability for bacteria and plants. Bacteria can either metabolize them through co-metabolism, where it's just their metabolism is a byproduct of using other food sources, or they can actually, some of them can be used as food sources. There is some evidence that bacteria become acclimated to these compounds and then exhibit potentiated degradation of them. Plants have uptake to varying degrees, as we've been learning earlier, and they also can store and metabolize these compounds. I was looking at the transformation of some radio-labeled compounds in soil with a couple different soil treatments to try to elucidate the effect of bacterial degradation and the organic matter in the soil. Diclofenac and naproxen are both non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They're available over-the-counter in many countries in the world. They have been detected in surface water at part per trillion concentrations. They also are both ionizable compounds. So at neutral pH, which is or around neutral pH, common to most environmental areas, then they are found in their ionized state, which affects their transport. Bisphenol A, we're all fairly familiar with from its presence in plastics and its concern about its endocrine disrupting abilities. It's also found in the linings of cans and other products. Nonylphenol is the precursor to nonylphenol ethoxylates, which are common in many surfactants and detergents that we use. In the environment, they're readily broken back down into the nonylphenol compound. Nonylphenol, because of its KOW, is also found in sediments. It has a fairly high log KOW up above 4. As I mentioned, both of these compounds are endocrine disruptors, and because of this, even these low concentrations are a readily cause for concern. For my study, I used these 5 soil treatments. The Irvine and Ventura soils were both collected from University of California Agricultural Extension sites, and they have different soil characteristics that should be interesting. The Irvine soil was sterilized because, as much of the literature shows, the main cause of transformation in soil is bacterial degradation. The Irvine amended soil was amended with compost to raise its organic matter content. The Maricopa soil is sort of unique because even though it is a clay loam, as the Ventura soil is, Maricopa is the site of the Gilbert Riparian Preserve, where they use reclaimed water to recharge the groundwater and have been doing that for over a decade. So this soil was collected from one of the recharge basins. With these radiolabeled compound, I used a respirometer setup. The lower vial contained the soil down here. This upper vial is used to store the sodium hydroxide solution. As the radiolabeled isotope is mineralized by bacteria, then the CO2 is trapped up here in the vial, and then the solution is measured by liquid scintillation counter for its radioactivity. After the sampling period for these respirometers, the soil was extracted, and the extracted portion and the compound it's in the soil that was extracted were analyzed for their activity. So for this study, I wanted to get some different sets of information. This is actually correct. This top slide should say mineralization rates, because that's what we're really talking about here, the mineralization of this radioisotope to the radioactive CO2. Then another concern is doing an overall mass balance for this system, trying to recover all the activity spiked into the system as far as its portion in the NOH as the CO2 form, its portion in the extractable soil, and then also what has adsorbed to the soil as a bound residue. A third concern was using the extracted soil, using that extract to run an HPLC and trying to identify the major transformation products. So the analysis of the mineralization has been completed. This is a 112-day study. I'd like you to note that the y-axis for the bisphenol A and the nonylphenol are both maxed out at 40% of the total mineralized portion, whereas diclofenac and naproxen are both here at 80%. So the bisphenol A and nonylphenol both had much lower mineralization of that radioactive isotope than diclofenac and naproxen had. Also, this red line at the bottom of all the graphs is the Irvine sterile soil. You can point out, and I admit freely, that there's obviously some degradation occurring here. And we've looked at that and decided that it's probably due to some contamination of the soil, that some bacteria were introduced. And so after a delayed period where they were growing, then they started doing mineralization. So from the mineralization data alone, it looks like we have some rates here of naproxen being mineralized better than diclofenac, better than BPA, better than nonylphenol, with some calculated half-lives here representing that. And the sterilized soil obviously did have an effect on the rate of mineralization. However, there's a caveat to that data because, as I mentioned, it just represents the radioisotope. And if you look at these structures here where the radioisotope is labeled with the asterisk, you'll note that, well, let's see, naproxen is radio-labeled at this end carbon, and diclofenac is labeled here at this sort of end carbon, and BPA and nonylphenol are both labeled on the ring. So it brings up concerns of whether the mineralization is just occurring because those are easy bonds to cleave. That's why it's so important to get the soil extract data and the combustion data, which I am not done with yet, I'm sorry. But the preliminary results from about half of the soils that I've worked on so far suggest these ideas, which I'll have to revisit once I have all the data. But it looks like the initial spike of the radioactivity partitions between the extractable and the bound fractions in the soil, and that for all the compounds, the extractable portion is greater than 65% initially. Over time, the extractable portion decreases, the mineralized portion increases, and either the bound fraction remains constant or for some compounds increases, which seems to suggest that over time that the amount that is bound either remains constant or even increases, and that it is the extractable portion, which is the bioavailable portion, that is mineralized. So thank you for your attention. This research was supported by the T32 training grant, and I'll take your questions.
We have time for a few questions. I will ask a question. That small device, you do the radioactive experiments, are they the device you design, or it's a...
It's not a device I designed, but it's a device that someone, a doctoral student a few years back in our lab, designed. And so it's been tested for its recovery, and it doesn't seem to have any problems with leaking or absorption.
Can we find them?
I had to make all of them. So if you want to pay me to make them for you. I had to make about 250 of those. I'm sorry, I'll take Manmeet.
Yes. I was looking at when you're saying the extractable fraction for the various
I didn't really address it, so you didn't miss it. There is a previously studied method by Lin et al. Extracting pharmaceuticals from soil that I used, and it involves using a phosphate buffer and methanol and shaking it and centrifuging it and decanting and then doing some filtering on that supernatant to get the extract from the soil. Sort of. So it's actually a you pour the phosphate buffer and the methanol at a proportion into the tube. You shake it, and then you actually do that three times. The first two times with the phosphate buffer methanol, and the third time with straight methanol. And so then what's remaining after all that, the soil that's been concentrated at the bottom, that's the part that gets combusted. Yeah, and maybe I should have included that in the slide. I didn't. But the clays from Ventura and Maricopa are both better than 50% clay. I'm thinking they're up above 60% too, whereas the Irvine soil is much lower. It is a sandy soil, so it was, I think, around 30% clay. And so that's certainly a consideration. I have only done it for some of the soils so far, but I did TIC and got their metal oxide content because that could be a significant factor in their adsorption to the soil.
So you're talking about the total clay content, but you're not sure about the mineralogy itself?
By mineralogy, do you mean the soil texture, or are you talking about like
the minerals in the clay fraction?
Oh, no, I have not done that yet.
You're very interested in your work. For each data point, is one wire, the second wire, one wire, you keep doing it with one wire.
So for the data points on the mineralization, each of those data points represents the average between the replicates, and it is actually, so how the respirometer works is that you take a syringe and you pull out that sodium hydroxide solution and analyze that without destroying the soil. So I did have four sets of these to sacrifice the whole soil and setup on 0, 3, 14, and 112 days, but in general those points are just the sodium hydroxide without disturbing the soil.
So for some of them, you do see actually 100% of mineralization.
For an approximate, it gets up to almost 80%. So it's not quite 100, but it is very significant.
So which one is the one you don't see much mineralization?
The lowest mineralization rate was for the nonylphenol, which only got to about 8% for the different soil types. But again, I wonder if it's just because where that radioisotope is labeled.
Well, did you do any burning, the combustion, or extraction experiment with nonylphenol?
Yeah. I didn't put up the data because it's not incomplete, and I don't want to give you the wrong idea of something that just is an artifact because it's not
anyway,
complete.
It's interesting, though, that our study has shown that the phenolic compounds are pretty easy to undergo that oxidative copy reactions.
Okay.
That suggests this, you know, cross-copy, or this bond residue is easier than before.
That's interesting.
Any more questions? If not, we're going to move to the second speaker.